Palmer versus Marion County et al. Go ahead.
Please the court, Your Honor. My name is Patrick Stern. I'm the attorney for the appellant, Mr. Palmer. The law in this case is pretty clear. This court's ruled hundreds of times, along with all the districts and the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court, on summary judgment. And the hard and fast rule is that summary judgment isn't appropriate when what we have is a swearing contest. And in this case, Palmer went into the Marion County Jail, and he didn't come in voluntarily. He was being held. And for the sake of argument, he's not disputing the fact that he was a violent individual and he had a violent past. What he is disputing is that he was assaulted by various inmates, and the various representatives of the Marion County Jail asked him to give a statement in order for them to prosecute, which they did prosecute the people that beat him up. And he gave a statement under the caveat, I really don't want to give a statement, because if I give you a statement, they're going to beat me up worse and they're going to kill me, which is putting in his affidavit. They said, don't worry, sir, we'll take care of you, that we have other places to put you. You don't have to go back with the same people. We'll take care of you. Are you sure? Yes. What they did was they immediately took him after
counsel,
the statement.
No, they gave him an opportunity.
Counsel, your problem in this case is that the guards are not among the defendants.
I understand that, Your Honor.
Sued only units of government.
And that was
units of government are not vicariously liable.
I understand that, Your Honor.
The question is, how does one proceed? What makes you think there is a disputed issue of material fact on a theory that the government has an unconstitutional policy?
We're talking about a deliberate indifference, which is a higher standard.
Why didn't you name the individual guards?
Because what happened, which is outside the record, was the original attorney, Heidi Meggerly, had filed the lawsuit, graduated law school the year after I did.
And what's that got to do with it? Why didn't you name the guards?
The original suit, the suit was filed way before. At the time I took the suit, it was set for jury trial. And then at the stage of jury trial, they came in with the last, there was.
Then why didn't you dismiss the case and begin over?
Because of the statute of limitations had run. We had a statute problem.
I don't know what.
But this issue then becomes under the Eighth Amendment deliberate indifference. And I think that the deliberate.
The critical need is to show that the municipality, Marion County, has an unconstitutional policy. Right, that's the need under Monell.
My question
to you is, what is it in the record that creates a disputed issue of material fact about the constitutionality of any of the municipality's policies?
By taking African-American individuals and putting them into a block referred to as the gladiatorial block, where it's made up of mainly.
What it is in the record
the
that
affidavit,
creates a disputed issue of material fact?
The affidavit of Mr. Palmer.
And is that affidavit made on personal knowledge that there is such a policy?
He was actually there when it happened.
No, being there when something happens doesn't tell you whether there is a policy. If you're run down by a municipal delivery truck, you're there when it happens. But it doesn't give you any insight into whether the municipality has a policy of running people down on the street.
I understand.
The question is, what evidence is there that there was policy?
And I stick to what I said, that the fact that he was there, he had personally observed what happened. And if I might, Your Honor, that nobody publishes a policy. You don't get a handbook when you walk into the Marion County Jail that says we're going to separately segregate people. The Chicago police doesn't
right.
have a policy.
So you could, in discovery, ask the jail warden how it is that people are assigned to different blocks, for example. That might provide some information about their policy.
Or you
but
could even ask for raw data.
All you seem to be doing is relying on your client's affidavit, and it doesn't look like your client has any personal knowledge about these issues.
Although under the Eighth Amendment, the way it was pled, they still have a policy of providing some safety to the jail. It becomes
right,
more
but the government did shift him to another area, and they asked him if he wanted to go into segregation. He said, no, I don't. So then they moved him to another area. It isn't that they have a policy of not trying to protect him, and on the other hand, the government isn't an insurer of his safety.
That's correct, and there's been hundreds of cases that have said that. The problem that we run into is that they never checked into him, and but for the fact that somebody came and forward and said, we have a problem here, he was found unconscious, beaten up in a cell a day later, which is reflected in his affidavit, along with another gentleman who had been there a day longer than him. So at some point in time, they just left him there to rot. At some point in time, you throw enough
How do you leave somebody there to rot if you didn't know that it happened?
There's a problem. If you accept the affidavit as being true, which you have to do under Rule 56, you have to accept his affidavit as being true, that he indicates to the guards that there's going to be a problem there, that they put me in the same position. They never checked up on him. They left him there. They indicated that they were...
You're describing, of course, a terrible thing that happened to Mr. Palmer. Nobody is disputing that with you, but the real issue is it the kind of isolated incident where one might bring a lawsuit against the guards for failing to follow up, failing to pay attention, being vindictive about him because he was a nuisance inmate or whatever, versus Marion County saying, we hope that our inmates will be beat up and left on the floor. We have a policy of ignoring them. We have a policy of never giving them a safe option for where they're going to live. There, the evidence in this record is only of a few isolated incidents, and that, as a matter of law, isn't enough to allow an inference that that's what the policy is.
Your Honor,
you have to establish a custom, a policy,
or practice.
Or a practice. And the affidavit doesn't do that either.
It's a question of fact, Your Honor. That the question is, nobody puts a policy in writing. Very few times do you actually get a case where somebody puts an unconstitutional policy in writing. What he is saying is he told him about the gladiatorial block. He's established that by his testimony it's a question of fact, not a question of law. Can a reasonable jury of six people believe that this conduct was an unconstitutional policy, practice, or procedure? And I believe that they can. It's more than just... If he wanted to have the matter tried in front of the judge, he could, but under the Seventh Amendment, he elected to have this tried before a jury, and it's a question to go before a jury. Now, we could take this before a jury, and he could tell the jury sitting there, this is what happened. The jury can come back and say, nope, no policy, no practice, no procedure. You're out of here. You get zero, and that's an acceptable outcome. What I'm saying is he asked for the jury. He didn't ask for the judge. And since he asked for the jury, he should be entitled to the jury. And if you listen to what he had to say, if you take his affidavit and his complaint as being true, could a reasonable jury make a determination that Marion County had a custom policy and practice of housing black inmates in a gladiatorial block to allow them to fight it out amongst themselves and to provide little safeguards and to provide little checking up on them? And I think that a reasonable...
You think that they should segregate blacks from whites?
No, but they shouldn't group them together. And that's
what he's... Doesn't the Constitution provide for that? That they're all equal?
That's correct.
So all right. And why should they segregate them?
They shouldn't segregate them.
Yeah, no, I think that's what he was saying. I think having an all-black block was wrong.
Right. Yeah. That's what Mr. Palmer's
complaining about.
Right. He's saying that what they do is they take and if you believe the affidavit...
Are you saying he was the only white in that
entire
area?
No, he was black. My client was black.
All right.
My client was black.
And he was in with other blacks.
All blacks known as the gladiatorial block. And the people put in the gladiatorial block are people that are violent individuals.
Are what?
Are violent offenders. Black violent offenders are put in the gladiatorial block.
Aren't there any whites in that at all?
According to his affidavit, no. It's made up of blacks.
There are no whites in that area at all?
Very few. So it's made up
of... Now we're down to a very few, but there are whites.
Very few. They're very, very few. It's made up of the most dangerous black inmates.
But it's the most dangerous people, whether they're
No. They're the most dangerous black inmates.
His affidavit says it's blacks, but there's the problem of if he's only there, I don't know how much time he spends in the Marion County Jail, but I mean, if he's only there once or twice, what the record lacks is some statistical reason to think that's what it's always like at the Marion County Jail. I would be very troubled if I thought the Marion County Jail had racially segregated cell blocks, but I don't know where the evidence in that record exists
his
to allow us to make
his
such
testimony.
Finding.
You said there were a small number of
one, at one day or one couple of days, but is that enough?
But that's not what's before us.
No, but the issue becomes, is this enough to establish that they have a policy? And he's entitled to bring that out.
Is it a widespread practice?
Yes, it is.
The question is this injury type, these injuries taking place, a widespread practice?
Within the data.
And is there a link showing that there, by transferring these people in there, they are, it's a widespread practice of them being beaten up and assaulted?
That's a question of fact, Your Honor. I mean, for a jury to determine, not a judge. The judge can't disregard his affidavit.
It has nothing to do with a jury or a judge. It could be determined by either. They're both fact finders.
I understand. But
you have not alleged that either.
The jury could determine it. The judge can determine it. I see my time is running. Can I continue?
Thank you.
The jury can determine it, or the judge can determine it. Under the Seventh Amendment, we have an option of which one we want. If you ask for the judge to determine it, you take the judge. Same as when you plead guilty, understand that I'm going to be the only one sentencing you. I'm going to be the only one trying you in a bench trial.
Thank you. All right, counsel.
Your Honors, if it pleases this court, my name is Jeff McQuarrie. I'm from the Indianapolis City Legal Department, and I represent the Sheriff of Marion County. There are two issues raised by Mr. Palmer's appeal. The first is whether Mr. Palmer designated any evidence showing that he gave notice to the sheriff of a specific, credible threat to his safety, which the sheriff could then ignore. The second issue is whether Mr. Palmer designated any evidence showing that if he gave that notice, did he give it to a policy-making official?
I thought the issue was whether the Marion County, whether there was evidence in the record that, if believed by a trier of fact, could show that the Marion County jail itself has a policy of either consigning certain inmates to places where they'll be beat up, you know, where it's sort of the law of the jungle, gladiatorial blocks or what have you, or if the Marion County jail has a policy of racially segregating its inmates. And I thought your argument was that his affidavit alone, while it might have recounted his impressions, wasn't enough to show either one of those policies.
Judge, that is my argument. Under the case Butera v. Cotty, there are essentially two ways that the plaintiff could proceed, given the nature of his claims. He could show that the notice was given directly to a policy-making official. In other words, that he warned the sheriff himself.
Well, what does notice have to do with it?
We're talking about different things.
Yeah.
You're trying to talk about the particular assault. The question has to do, and indeed this case has to do, with the general policy.
I mean, if we had the guards before us as defendants, all of the things you're talking about would be very important, because guards can't be mind readers, and he, in fact, did tell the guards something. They offered him the solitary. He didn't want that. Things went badly. But that really doesn't, like Judge Easterbrook, it doesn't strike me as what the case has evolved to by this point.
Well, Judge, I think that that's correct. And in any event,
I think what is correct?
That that a relevant issue is whether Mr. Palmer has designated any evidence showing that there is a pattern of unconstitutional violations in the jail, such as would give the sheriff notice that Mr. Palmer faced some kind of threat to his safety.
Why is notice important? Suppose the jail had a policy that just frankly said, you know, blocks T1, T2, and T3 are for the African Americans, T4 is for the Hispanics, and T5 is for the Caucasians. Plainly unconstitutional. It doesn't matter about anybody giving notice to the sheriff or anything else. If we had a book, you know, that you publish and give to the Indianapolis public that said that, I mean, it's preposterous, of course, and obviously you wouldn't, but the reason you wouldn't is because we all know that we're not allowed to have such policies.
Certainly, Judge, an express policy can be found unconstitutional per se.
And it doesn't matter about notice. And so why isn't it just a question of how easy it is to prove the policy? One doesn't find such things written down now because people know they shouldn't do it, but it's possible to prove through circumstantial evidence, if you want to call it that, that there is a policy that people don't want to talk about very much out loud.
It is indeed possible to prove it simply through circumstances. Mr. Palmer has not done that. Mr. Palmer has not designated evidence of a widespread pattern
of
constitutional violations.
Of not mixing the people together? or of the assaulting after Mixon?
Either. Either. The only evidence he has designated, and which we do not dispute, is that he was assaulted on that certain day.
Do we have any data about the number of assaults in this block and, say, the average time between the occurrence of the assault and intervention by the guards?
Judge Easterbrook, the record is devoid of that information.
Plaintiff's claim has to imply that the number of assaults is very high and that the average time from the attack to intervention is fairly long.
Judge, there is
so we need to know whether those things
no factual information in the record whatsoever about that, other than the single incident that he experienced. The most that he alleges is some very conclusory statements in his affidavit that there are gladiator blocks, that these blocks are racially segregated, and that there have been incidents there in the past. But that affidavit is not something that that meets the plaintiff's burden under I believe it's the Farmer State Bank case. It is necessary to show a pattern, and there is no pattern here. Mr. Palmer's affidavit merely makes conclusory, sweeping statements for which he lays no foundation of personal knowledge. In a number of cases, his affidavit contradicts the deposition statements. This affidavit simply provided no evidence whatsoever, and the district court rightly disregarded it. Given that absence of evidence, Your Honors, sheriff requests that the judgment of the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you,
sir. All right, we will proceed to case number 6.